Golf fans among us might know the legend. God stood one day between Jack Nicklaus and Arnold Palmer and put an arm around each of their shoulders. God said to Nicklaus, "You will go down in history as the greatest golfer ever." Then God turned to Arnold Palmer and said, "But you will be the one the people love." Have you ever considered that it's possible for someone like Jesus to have been greatly appreciated, but not always wanted, loved? Jesus went home and taught. He was welcomed like a celebrity at first, so it seems. So proud were those who gathered to listen. "He's so grown up now," one said. "Can this be Mary and Joseph's boy?" another wondered. "He must be successful. He has people following him around, you know," one proud neighbor observed. "Yes, I heard he's even done a miracle or two." Then he started teaching. The whispers continued. "Look at how the young girls are watching him. He won't have any problem getting a date now. I hear he has a book coming out soon. I'll bet his website is phenomenal. And the Twitter followers, the Instagram followers, my goodness, I'm so proud of Jesus." Another said, "That's nothing. I dropped the words water and wine into my search engine, and his name was the first one that came up." "I heard he was going to have to buy a huge auditorium," another person said, "because he's already run out of space for worship. All those followers can't be wrong, you know." "Yes, and I wonder how long it'll be before he has his own television ministry. Surely he'll go global with his ministry soon." "Wait a minute. Did you hear what he just said?" "Yeah, I was with him up till that last part. Seminary really messed him up, made a liberal out of him. How embarrassing, insulting even. How's that for gratitude to the home crowd? We didn't raise him like that. Heresy. He can't say that. That's heresy. Somebody's got to stop this. Call security. Do we have security? When this is over, his mother will never serve as president of our auxiliary again." And he walked right through them. That was my reaction to this story from Jesus' life when I wrote about it in my book, A Hungry Soul. Mark's gospel gives us the executive summary of the story that seems to be the same one John told in chapter 4 of his gospel. Think about it. If something made it into even two of the four gospels, then it must have been important. It's actually all important, isn't it? But if it made it into two, it must be really important. And if you want to read the long form, and trust me, you do want to read the long form, then check out John's version of this story in his gospel. Now, I can't speak for all pastors, of course, but I think if you got most of us honest enough for just a minute, they would corroborate what I'm about to say. And I know that we're not Jesus, but stick with me on this anyway. We occupy a weird place in most people's lives, in our community even, we pastors. I've come to call it appreciated, but not always wanted. Now, before you make up your mind to come to me at the door and try to make me feel better, just listen and stick with me. Let me explain with a story. John is a friend of mine, and when he was a new young pastor in a small middle Georgia community, the community was jokingly called a suburb of a larger small town nearby, county seat, rural middle Georgia. And he had followed the beloved longtime pastor in that little community, the one that they all remembered, the one they still talked about. And that fellow still lived there. He had been there so long, he just stayed after he retired. And so he was yet still a part of their lives in the church. So John was in his first few weeks as the new pastor when he had already heard for the umpteenth time about an inactive church member who was better known as the town drunk. John heard about him as in, "Hey, new guy, go try your hand at what no one else has been able to do and see if you can straighten him out." We get these kinds of assignments from time to time. So he went for a visit and found the man sitting on his front porch swing. The fruity smell that hung in the air told John all he needed to know about the man's condition already that morning. They shook hands and John sat down to talk. The man was surprisingly mellow and easy to talk with. John was encouraged that he might even build a relationship with this man. They were hitting it off. He felt like, against all odds in that conversation, that he was becoming this man's pastor. And about the time he had that thought, a car rounded the corner just down the street and headed toward them. It was the car that everyone knew belonged to the recently retired former pastor. The man said, "Oh no," and he sank down in the porch swing. And John said, "What's wrong?" And the man replied, "Well, yonder's the preacher, and here I am drunk." Of course, my friend tells the story for laughs, but he adds the punchline, "So what was I to him, chopped liver?" John was humbled to find out that he had not yet moved up to the preacher seat, even in the eyes of a drunk, and neither one of them seemed especially wanted in that moment. Now, one in my line of work can eventually become what some in clergy circles call the chaplain to the community. We tend to get invited to some things. The local funeral home has a family in that needing a burial and they're not active in a church and suddenly they need a minister. We might get that phone call. You're having a 5K run or a mini marathon and you want an invocation spoken before it starts. We'd probably get the call. You're trying to get some divided factions together within a community and trying to build some unity. You need to call in key people who have groups. We might be a logical place you would call. Heaven forbid a tragedy unfolds within the community, and sometimes they'll pull in ministers to support and to serve as counselors. Ribbon cuttings, pet blessings, weddings, baccalaureates. Someone has their program at your community meeting canceled at the last moment. It's not unusual for folks to call one of us because they know we are willing to speak publicly. In those settings, we are appreciated for what we can do. And if nothing else, it seems we are usually willing to pray ceremonially for our lunch. Getting up a crowd to have some beers with the guys and bet on the big Triple Crown horse race? Crickets at my office. Just got married, and now the wedding reception that couldn't be held in the fellowship hall is about to start. Thank you for doing the ceremony. You did a beautiful job. We know you have an early morning coming. Thank you. Hosting a house full of people for a casino night fundraiser complete with open bar? Phone's sometimes not going to ring on my end. Getting the neighborhood guys together. All the guys, including those three that no one's sure are fit for public consumption. I might look like a downer to the non-church-going crowd. Don't want to make anyone uncomfortable. That's the way it is for us. And that's the way it is with us, with Jesus sometimes, you know? We appreciate him for the whole salvation thing. But he's not always wanted in every moment of our lives. Their reaction to his words at his hometown, in his home synagogue in Mark and John, didn't diminish the truth of what he had said. He spoke as a prophet, but all they could see was the boy they had helped raise. He spoke on behalf of God, and all they could see was 30 years in the past when he was a toddler running around the carpenter shop. He dared to associate himself as a fulfillment of God's more celestial nature. And all they could think of was how well they knew his parents. He was appreciated as one of them. But he was not wanted for what he truly was. Now, just in case you think Jesus was having a bad day there, Mark throws in another related story. One day, Jesus, as you heard earlier, was sending out the disciples two by two. He gave them the instructions you heard. Whenever you enter a house, Stay there until you leave the place. If any place will not welcome you and they refuse to hear you as you leave, shake off the dust that's on your feet as a testimony against them. Matthew seems to have recorded this same episode, and in his account, Jesus adds, "See, I'm sending you out like sheep into the midst of wolves. So be as wise as serpents and innocent as doves. Beware of them, for they will hand you over to councils and flog you in the synagogues, and you will be dragged before governors and kings because of my name." Now that sounds melodramatic, a little overstated, except that it's from Jesus. And you know what? It turned out to be true. So here's where I need to be fair to the other people in the story. The ones who failed to fully recognize just what Jesus was, because I can be an awful lot like them. When I was a teenager, there was a little booklet, really no larger than a pamphlet. It was put out by the home mission board of our convention at the time. It was entitled, "My Heart, God's Home." And the metaphor was that our inner selves were like a home into which Jesus had requested to be admitted. "Behold, I stand at the door and knock." You remember. And it talked of how open we might be with Jesus as we pulled the door in and he stepped into the entry, the den. How we might even take him into the kitchen and give him food to eat. Lay open to him our cabinets and our pantries. We might even offer him a room in which to lodge. But then the pamphlet, as it narrated this story, this metaphor of receiving Jesus, made the uncomfortable acknowledgement that we all have that room. Maybe just a closet or a room. The part of our lives off limits to Jesus the visitor. Even we don't like what's in that closet of our heart. We know what's in there, and parts of its contents scare even us. We'd be embarrassed to show Jesus that space. He's welcomed into the house, but there are limits of what we're going to keep to ourselves. And that always stuck with me, because I know I can be like that. Maybe you can too. I can tell Jesus that he's wanted, but what I really mean sometimes is that he's appreciated, that he might be the greatest savior of all time, but that the interest of the moment, the vexing problem of the season, the hobby or the passion that I'm pouring my life into, the prejudice or bias that's been traveling with me all my life, the things I actually end up giving my time and my money to, they can become the ones that I really deep down want. Mark Eddington says of the rejection of Jesus at the synagogue in this text that the questions the crowds have of Jesus about his deeds and his powers spring from their inability to reach the conclusion that seemed to come so easy to the narrator, Mark. These miracles, these powerful teachings, were the work of a king. Instead of being able to see that, the hometown crowd had about Jesus, the little boy they had raised, disbelief. Their reactions are the natural stance that spring from unbelief. I wonder how we wrestle with disbelief, you and me, in our faith. When we hear Jesus say something that we're just not ready to hear, when we hear a teaching that sounds right but would push us out of our comfort zones and into places we would feel awkward about or worse, when we see Jesus do something that we don't think we'd like to be asked to do, when a truth comes bursting into our lives whose timing is so bad, so inconvenient that we just don't want it to be so, then we wrestle with our own unbelief. We wrestle within the gap between hearing or even speaking the word versus actually doing the word. Michael Lindvall tells a compelling story from a graduation that happened at Emory University a few years ago. The usual things were happening at a university graduation. Honor graduates were being recognized. honorary degrees to wealthy donors and influential people were being handed out. Recipients were making brief remarks. As is so often the case at commitments, though, the students were chatting among themselves and few were actually paying attention. That is, until the least educated person who was sitting up on the stage began to talk. Then they listened. Hugh Thompson did not come close to finishing college. He chose instead to enlist in the Army and he became a helicopter pilot. And on March 16, 1968, he was flying a routine patrol in Vietnam when he happened to fly over the village of May Lai, and he couldn't believe what he was seeing. American troops were seen right below his helicopter slaughtering dozens of unarmed villagers, old men, women, children, defenseless people. And Thompson set his helicopter down between the troops and the remaining civilians that they had not shot. And he ordered his tail gunner to train the helicopter guns on the American soldiers. And he ordered the gunman through his PA to stop killing the villagers. Hugh Thompson's actions saved dozens of lives that day, although he was almost court-martialed for it. It was 30 years before the Army confirmed the story, publicly admitted the story, and awarded him the Soldier's Medal. What he did was greatly appreciated by some, but not at all wanted by others. And as he stood at the podium microphone, the rowdy student body grew still. And then Thompson talked about his faith. Simple words. Speaking of what his parents had taught him as a child, Thompson said, "They taught me to do unto others as you would have them do unto you." And the students were amazed at these words of Jesus, words from their Sunday school, words from worship, words of Christian testimony. They leapt to their feet and gave him a standing ovation. And Linval goes on to say, Thompson's words about his faith had weight because the man had obviously walked the talk. In the same way, Linval says, the church will only be heard if what we do as Christians is congruent with what we say we believe about our faith. Yeah, we feel about Jesus the way we do sometimes because he does this. He takes our lives the way we have them set up, the way we wanted them. And then he nudges and speaks to us. Before you know it, he has us doing things and saying things we would have never seen ourselves being a part of. He also tends to take us places ahead of our schedules if we'd been left to ourselves. And that's just it. Jesus won't leave us to ourselves. We love to say he meets us where we are. But thanks be to God, Jesus never leaves us where he found us. And it's one of the reasons why Jesus is appreciated by plenty, just not always wanted. Our hymn of response is listed in your worship bulletin. It's hymn number 356. We praise you, O God, our Redeemer. And as we stand to sing on this day, I hope that the words that you're singing lead you in your response. If you have a response that needs to be made down here, I'll be waiting. Otherwise, if you have a response that's best made right where you are, if you feel like you're right with your church and with your Lord, then sing these songs and pay attention to the words you're singing as we stand and sing hymn number 356. Let's stand.